Today is October 19th, 2016, and this is episode number 381 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin. Oh, golly, no title. Haiku Master. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I love haiku. That one that starts, "The once was a man from Nantucket," is just so great.
That's not a haiku, man. That's a limerick. Here, I wrote a haiku for Thomas the Tank. It was a thing, but here it goes. Cars, coal, hills, and tracks. I climb and cannot go back. Caboose is empty. My gift to the world.
That's awesome. And so poignant. And
what's that?
It's poignant. And I'm assuming that Thomas is pulling a train to Nantucket. I should probably point out to the world, I do know the difference between a limerick and a haiku.
No. Don't point that out.
I mean,
don't ruin it for me, sir.
Okay.
Sorry, so maybe not a haiku master, maybe a haiku student, and maybe I've got the dunce cap on, but whatevs. that's just nitpicking.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it's really poignant, the empty caboose and all of that. I mean, it's like a metaphor.
Well, the online game community, gaming community, Game of War community that I'm in, the alliance that I'm in, someone posted a screenshot from Thomas the Tank and asked everybody, challenged everybody to caption it. And the expression on Thomas's face in this screenshot is just like, it's just this, like, he's trying to figure out the answers to life, the universe, and everything, and that's what inspired him. He had to be there. Not a good story. Can we just take that up? And I'm Brian Chaffin, wannabe haiku dude.
Nantucket.
All right, we're caught back up. Excellent. So Tim Cook is Vice President of the United States of America.
Wouldn't that be interesting? And I think in an alternate reality, it may be well on the way to becoming Vice President of the United States right now. I know what you're referring to. There was a WikiLeaks email from Hillary Clinton's campaign team.
And it was stolen and leaked?
Yes. Yeah, so WikiLeaks posted this email, and it was a list of potential vice presidential running mates for Hillary Clinton. And the list had some politicians, it had business leaders, it had an interesting mix of people. And on that list was Tim Cook's name.
Which is interesting. And, you know, we were talking about this before the show, as we were trying to pick our topics. And
apparently a whole show done in haiku wasn't an option.
There was much rejoicing. What's my point here? It's the first, we weren't actually sure that we wanted to talk about this. And the first point that I made was that I wasn't sure, I don't think at all, actually, that Tim Cook's very reserved manner, or reserved manner, depending on, you know, where you're from, would campaign well. You know, I see when Tim Cook speaks, I read him, I think, very well. I can see when he's passionate I can see when he's controlled and measured. I think that especially on the news, you know, the news circuit,
uh-huh,
that he would be skewered as wooden or plastic or a mannequin or
drab.
You know, just drab. I mean, who, you know, like all kinds of negative. I think all kinds of negative attributes would be attributed to his speaking style. And furthermore, that the vast majority of people wouldn't be able to connect with him.
I think it would have been a problem in the vice presidential debates. The debate that I watched, oh man, it was a circus out of control. And
but I think Tim Cook could run circles around Mike Pence.
Oh, absolutely. But the problem in the debate was that Mike Pence was just like off the hook, out of control, and wouldn't stop talking and interrupting. And
no, that was Tim Kaine. But
what did I just say?
You said Pence. So Pence is the GOP
right.
Vice presidential candidate. He's Trump's running mate, and Tim Kaine is Hillary
Clinton's running mate.
And he was the one who was interrupting. And
yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But see how well I had done it at blocking this out of my mind? It was a disaster to watch.
And we're not. There's a time and place to delve into politics. We're not actually delving into the politics of this particular campaign with this discussion. We're talking more, at least not yet. We're talking simply about campaigning style.
Yeah.
And Mike Pence is a very accomplished speaker. His background before he got into politics was talk radio. He has a conservative talk radio program that was a regional success. And he was able to adequately control that debate. I think that Tim Cook intellectually would smash and crush Mike Pence, because I think that Tim Cook is off the chart smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that intellectually he would be so controlled and disciplined in a debate that he would probably win on the merits of a debate, but I don't think that people would be able to connect with him as he did so. And you know, it's very possible to win a debate and lose a debate at the same time.
Sure.
So I don't know how well that Tim Cook would. I don't know how well that Tim Cook would campaign. You know, and of course, and it's also possible that he would have a different demeanor on the campaign trail. Of course, he could be coached for it.
But that would be kind of weird to watch.
Well, it would be for us.
Yes.
Most of America, a lot of people may know who Tim Cook is, but the vast majority of people don't have anywhere near the familiarity that we or our listeners do.
That's true. Most of the people that are seeing Tim Cook speak, or have seen Tim Cook speak recently, are probably seeing him through the lens of the TV interviews that he's been on.
Yeah, the TV interviews, or even coverage of Apple's keynotes.
Right, and when you're looking at keynote coverage, you get these little sound bites. So you can't build a good idea of what someone is like as a speaker just from little sound bites.
Right.
Yeah.
And then so the next thing that Jeff and I talked about was Tim Cook's stance on encryption and the fact that there may have been resistance within the current administration to Tim Cook's candidacy. That actually really doesn't matter to the campaign, and it actually doesn't matter from a legal standpoint. Justice and the law and order side of particular administration really cannot have an institutional opinion on who's running, you know, who the candidate is. Plus the campaign and the current administration aren't necessarily connected. In this case, they aren't connected at all, except for, well, anyway, that's a rabbit hole.
Right.
if that was going to be a problem, it would actually be a problem, I think, much more so from the candidate herself in this case, because we are talking about him being a Democratic choice. Mm. So Hillary Clinton could well have a problem with Tim Cook's stance on encryption. It wouldn't surprise me if she did, actually. And that would be a reason to kick him. I would imagine that if the full list was given full consideration, I would imagine that this discussion that you and I just had about his demeanor would have been part of their decision-making process.
Yep, I can see that. Yep.
And I would imagine that his stance on encryption would have been part of the process as well. But then, and we still weren't decided on whether or not we were going to broach this topic for the show. And Jeff said something along the lines of, you weren't sure that he would want to do it, or you didn't think he would want to do it?
I don't think he would actually want to run for vice president or be vice president.
And that was when I figured I wanted to talk about it, because I think you're wrong. And the reason why I think you're wrong is, if called upon to serve his, to do service like this for the country, to serve his country is oftentimes is usually more of a military service kind of thing. So, and I want to be careful about how I use that. But if he was called upon to do this kind of service, I think that he would give it great consideration, even though I believe that his driving ambition right now is to make sure that Apple remains the kind of company that Steve Jobs would have been proud of.
Sure. And yep, I totally get that, and I agree. And I think he would seriously consider whether or not that's a path he should pursue. I think in the end, Tim would decide that what he needs to do is make the choice that best serves the people. And my guess is that he would feel that he can better serve people by running Apple and championing our privacy and security.
Then to be vice president of the United States, are you nuts? You think what?
Okay. Hear me out. So if Tim Cook were vice president of the United States, he would be president of the Senate, where he would have a direct hand in legislation. However, he'd be dealing with it from the standpoint of politics. And that means that many things that he would want to see happen, he would not be able to make happen, simply because that's how politics works. I mean, politics is all about compromise or blocking other people from getting what they want. And I think that his ability to effectively ensure that we have strong encryption and good digital privacy, it would be hobbled. But if he's the CEO of Apple, he can say, this is what we're doing, and the company does it.
Yeah, I don't even know who you are, because that's ridiculous. Just like, I think that may be one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard you say.
Well, I'm good at ridiculous.
Why are you friends with me again?
Because you write these really great limericks.
Okay, that was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Well played. Well played. So first of all, you're just entirely wrong about the
about everything you just said. I like this romanticized version of Tim Cook that I've created.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, that the problem is factually wrong. The power of the power that someone like Tim Cook would have to help craft policy, guide choices made within the administration, and specifically help craft policies on things like equality and civil rights and equal rights, not to mention the encryption thing. He would have immeasurably more power to affect actual U.S. policy and legislation from within the government than he ever would. Orders of magnitude more than he ever would with in the private sector. In the private sector at Apple, he can make Apple customers get privacy, get encryption. He can cause that to happen. But that can be taken away at the national level by the government through legislation. It can just be taken away. It doesn't matter how good Apple is. Doesn't matter the fact that iMessage today is end-to-end user encryption. That can just be made illegal, and it's got to go away in one fell swoop.
You know, when I said what I said, I was actually that was totally tunnel vision, because I was thinking strictly of the security and privacy side, and wasn't even thinking about what he could do for civil rights and for equal rights. And he could be a very powerful champion for equality as a vice president of the United States.
Equality and civil rights. I mean, Tim is a gay man, and obviously LGBT issues, he's made it very clear that equality on the LGBT front is very important to him. But he's made it known for a lot longer through his words and actions that civil rights and equality for everyone based on all factors is very important to him. And he could, in fact, be that champion. And vice presidents do, modern vice presidents at the very least, can do quite a bit. Dick Cheney was probably one of the most powerful vice presidents in American history. Joe Biden has done a lot as vice president too. Dick Cheney headed numerous task forces on essentially gutting government regulation of various industries and gutting environmental protections. He did all kinds of things as vice president where he was directly affecting policy, directly heading up these task force that put together policy positions of the administration. And Joe Biden has been this huge diplomat and a force behind the scenes within the U.S. government, you know, reaching out to people and corralling people and twisting arms and doing things like that. I mean, the vice president doesn't have a lot of direct power, but depending on what a president allows the vice president to do, and depending on the person who is actually sitting in the vice presidency, they can be fabulously powerful from an influence and directional standpoint. And I think that Tim Cook would see that opportunity as a chance to have a lasting impact on the United States, and would embrace that opportunity and accept the responsibility.
You know, when you mix in the equal rights, which I wasn't even thinking about, that changes things a lot. And I can see where that would be really, really tempting. I still wonder, though, if that's a job that Tim would want.
I could do it.
I don't know. It's... I mean, when politics is an ugly game, and
well, it's true, and it's true. And Tim Cook is not an ugly person, right? He is a. I'm not gonna sit here and start pretending that he's, you know, made of puppy dogs and rainbows, but he is a person who, generally speaking, seems to look for and see the best in people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if anything,
yes. Are you going to present this as haiku?
No, but I was thinking about
there once was a leader from Apple.
Yes, go ahead.
No, I was giving you the setup, you know, like helping you get into your to your limerick, your haiku.
I think that Tim would embrace this opportunity and accept this responsibility, and I think that he would probably be a fantastic vice president.
I think he would be an amazing vice president. I just don't know if. I don't know. It's maybe it's because I'm projecting myself onto Tim in this case, because the idea of being a politician to me, like personally being a politician, is so distasteful. It is not a career that I have any interest in whatsoever. And I'm not saying that to demean politicians. It's just that's not a career path that I have any interest in whatsoever. Therefore, by extension, of course, Tim Cook does not have any interest in that.
Yeah, fair enough. And, you know, we all project. So,
you know, considering how private Tim is, I don't know if he'd be willing to expose himself and his personal life in that way, because it's hard enough for him to keep his personal life personal as the CEO of Apple. Can you imagine how much more difficult that would be if he was vice president?
Yeah, and I think he'd accept that. That's what I meant by accept it, embrace the opportunity and accept the responsibility.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's, not either.
I mean, the not idea either. And Tim Cook as vice president is kind of cool.
We have no idea how serious of a candidate for candidacy that he ever was in the first place. We don't know if he was on the list, but we don't know that anyone after compiling that list gave him serious consideration.
What we do know is that Tim Cook and Hillary Clinton had a private, like a truly one-on-one meeting after that.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that. I didn't actually read your article.
Well, that's you might as well be my girlfriend.
Hey, there are people who think that we date, you and I.
Yeah, well, you know, I bet the fanfic is amazing.
That's funny. We got a letter. What's our timestamp?
Oh, we are at 23 minutes right now.
Fantastic. We got a letter. We got a couple letters, actually. Tim Wiles had some criticism. It's just a few thoughts I have endeavored to distill. I continue to listen to the podcast. He's referring to this particular podcast. Uh-huh. In the interest of a potentially better podcast, I have to be honest, and we always appreciate that, Tom. The podcast, ACM, is at its lowest when exuding the petulant smugness that reinforces the stereotype of the Apple fan buying his way to superiority. Quote, I'm superior because I buy Apple products, unquote, is a genuine turnoff to many potential Apple customers. The overt hatred of Samsung adds nothing to the show. However, being overly emotional to the point of obsession is unprofessional. It is reminiscent of car dealers bashing the competition. Never a good sales or brand strategy. If you can't say something good, don't say anything. Podcast is strongest when it describes practical new things that can be accomplished with modern mobile technology. So a couple thoughts there.
Do tell.
Well, one, it's not our responsibility to advance Apple's brand. So I don't really think the car analogy actually holds true. Like, you know, we don't work for Apple.
No.
So we're not bashing competition. We're actually.
Oh man, we would get fired so fast if we work for Apple.
That's an understatement of the year. In that way, I don't find much empathy with Mr. Wiles' opinion on that particular aspect. I mean, don't get me wrong. I get the fact that that people may not, there are always going to be people who don't enjoy any particular rant that we go on. I mean, much of this show is about us ranting about something that we're passionate about. Sometimes it's actually just about exploring. Like, I don't know if we're truly passionate about the idea of Tim Cook being VP. You know, certainly passion fuels a lot of what makes this show the show, and that we're not always going to appeal to everybody. Right.
I find that hard to believe, but yes, yes. It's possible that we don't appeal to everybody.
Yeah, we also subscribe to the idea
that you don't appeal to everybody.
Yeah, you probably do. I would imagine that most people really can't stand me.
I think you're wrong. I think there's a lot of people that like you.
Maybe. We also subscribe to the idea that if we're not pissing someone off at some point, we're probably doing it wrong. Not from the standpoint that we want to be shock jocks, because that's not true.
I don't want to be a shock jock.
But, you know, we just can't please everybody all the time. And I don't know. There you have it. I really do hate Samsung. I hate them.
You know,
they're just a company.
Samsung. Okay, hate is not something that I really do, except for broccoli and cauliflower.
Oh. Yeah, but you're a better person than I am.
So, we're good together. I'm starting to see why the fanfic is happening.
The fanfic, yeah.
I definitely get really frustrated with Samsung, and there are times when I do take a bit of inappropriate joy from their failures, and apparently I was about to say not to justify, which means I'm probably trying to justify. I remember the underdog days for Apple, and to see Apple in a position where they're on top and the other guys get to be the underdogs, it is kind of a nice feeling a little bit. And it's just one of those things where
Do you remember the Vanity Fair piece profiling Samsung's, you know, decades long track record of stealing IP, corruption, bribery?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
On Thursday, October 20th, which is tomorrow as of this recording, from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, I'll be doing a webinar with... let me actually get the names, because that's just how I roll. Gene Quinn is going to be moderating. Also on the show is going to be Robert S. Katz. He's an attorney. They're both IP attorneys. Gene Quinn is the guy behind IP Watchdog.
Okay.
They're intellectual property attorneys, and for some reason they wanted me on a show talking about Apple versus Samsung, specifically centered around the idea of the question of whether or not violation of a patent should entitle a patent holder to 100% of the profits from any product that violates that patent. So, right. So it's going to be a bunch of esoteric stuff. And they wanted me on there to actually sort of take the layman's view on the Apple v. Samsung aspect.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it could be. No, it actually should be. It should be a fantastic discussion. Gene is a real brainiac, and his IP related blog is quite popular within those circles. I honestly expect to learn quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to it. My point is that I was reviewing some of the original Apple versus Samsung stuff, and I'm just just reading through Samsung's systematic plundering of Apple's IP to build its product into something that was that wasn't less than an also ran in the smartphone market just infuriates me. Just absolutely, I am passionate about that, and will probably continue and remain passionate about it.
You know, I'm okay that we get passionate about topics, because if we didn't, we wouldn't enjoy doing the show.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and we do actually have to make the show interesting to us first. Rick Allen, friend of the show.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Rick.
What's up, dude? He sent us in a whole bunch of information on USB kill.
Yes,
and optically isolated ports. Remember, we asked people to actually teach us something on that.
And boy, how was that for going out on a limb when I brought up diagrams, electrical diagrams, showing what an optically isolated USB circuit looks like, and I'm trying to interpret them without being an electrical engineer. So thank you, Rick, for being smarter than me.
Yeah, and smarter than me too. He said optically isolated ports means that there is no electrical connection in the data path between components. Essentially, there is a small fiber converter in the plug that optically encodes the data and then decodes the data on the other side. That would protect the logic board and the delicate electric components. The USB kill device could mess with the power part of the USB subsystem, though. And he said that he pointed out that the folks behind USB, we're talking about this device, right? This USB, it looks like a USB drive. Mm-hmm. But what it actually is a motherboard full or a circuit board full of capacitors. Hate and anger designed to destroy whatever it's plugged into. So he said the company behind USB kill, they also market it as an ESD tester. Really, there's a difference between feet and carpet static and a deliberate big jolt of electricity designed to damage the circuits.
So my notion, based on the diagrams I was looking at, that it could act as a sort of fuse to protect the rest of the motherboard was wrong.
Yeah, it's because it seems like it's just more of a more of like the dead air in a double pane window.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's isolating, not fusing.
Yeah.
Or being a fuse. Anyway, thanks very much for the feedback, both positive and negative. We always appreciate it, whether or not we agree with it. And
I like absolutely to think all that feedback was positive.
Well, there was some criticism.
Yeah, but it was constructive criticism.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So it's all positive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, fair. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Where are we here? iTunes star ratings.
Oh, I thought this was the part where we're supposed to bag on Samsung.
I think we just did.
Oh, right. Okay. So now, iTunes star ratings.
Right.
This is the part where we bag on Apple, isn't it?
Yes, this is the part where we bag on Apple. iTunes star ratings have essentially been all but deprecated by Apple.
Yeah, it's a binary thing.
So on iOS,
isn't it?
They're gone. Yes. So star ratings allow you to give a 1 to 5 star rating to a song. And you could do this in iTunes, and you could do this on the music player on iOS. What's it called these days?
Music.
These days, it's just music, right? Because it's, you know, Apple Music, and not to be confused with iTunes. Yeah, music. So
you can give this star rating.
No. You're killing me today, man. You could give songs ratings as they were being played. And in iTunes, of course, you could actually just go down your list and you could show the ratings and just go down your list and rate them as you wanted. And then you could do things like have smart playlists based on your star ratings.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did like that. even though I didn't really do it much. But yeah, I like that.
I did it. I used a four and five star playlist, and then I had a five star playlist. And depending on my mood, it would be the one that I would listen to.
Okay.
So, you know, and that's just me. I'm sure that lots of people do it and lots of different use them.
Some days you're feeling, you know, I want to listen to music I really like. And then other days you're like, you know, I want to listen to the best music ever. So, was it that you didn't feel like you deserved to listen to the best music ever all the time?
No, it wasn't a self-hatred thing. Okay. It was more of when I wanted to be inspired. Oh, I just realized that. I love it when I have revelations like that. Mm.
So your star ratings equated to inspiration?
Yeah. Well, no, the ratings themselves did not. The way I used them did. So like if I was driving, for instance, if I was driving across country, taking a long road trip, I'd probably listen to a 4 and 5 star rating, a 4 and 5 star playlist.
Okay.
If I was working on my book, I would absolutely listen to the 5 star playlist.
Okay.
It'd always be interesting when I would realize that I misrated a song too later. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is Apple is essentially taking it away. And iOS, you can't even see that data. And not only can you not see that data, it's been replaced with this binary heart or not heart.
Okay. So it'd be like,
right.
Like or not like. Or like, right. or indifferent.
Well, it's interesting. It's binary, but it could mean like or not like. But it could also mean like or I haven't marked it yet, because that is the same thing as not liking something because it's binary. Mm-hmm. You can't see or edit or have access to your star ratings in iOS 10. That information is not displayed in any way. You can't see it. And even if you had something rated 5 stars, it's not liked.
So if you've spent years going through your music library and rating everything, that information is basically worthless now.
It is worthless on iOS. It is still accessible in iTunes, in iTunes 12.5 on macOS Sierra. It is viewable, but you have to do a get info on a song to see it or edit it. You can heart things in several views when you're looking at your music library. And you can also heart things in Apple Music. But your star ratings are there, but only if you do a get info. And you could still do a playlist on that. You know what I haven't done? I haven't actually checked to see how, if I did a 5 star playlist in iTunes and then have it be, let's see here, can I do a smart playlist?
Watching Brian make the sausage.
New smart playlist. Contains.
This is science happening right here, people.
Let's see here if you can still do this.
So what you're trying to do is make a smart playlist that groups songs based on star rating?
Yeah, so okay. You can still make a smart playlist, and you can still have that be with star ratings. And what I'm actually fairly confident this would be the case. So if you then put that playlist on your iOS device, the songs would be there. The playlist would be accurate, but you still wouldn't be able to see the darn ratings.
Which, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, from a logical standpoint, that makes sense.
Right, I'm confident that would be the case. I don't understand why Apple has done this. A binary heart or not heart system is very social media friendly.
And Okay, so I think you have half of the reason right there.
Okay.
And I think I have the other half of the reason for you.
Do tell.
And I'm going to use myself as the example. I didn't even realize the star ratings were gone.
Mm.
My guess is that the majority of people weren't using the star ratings. And whatever Apple's threshold is for keeping a feature prominent or even in a product at all was too low. So they buried the feature, and eventually it's going away completely. So there you go. There's your two-prong answer. It's very social media, the way it's set up right now, which makes sense to a lot of people, and not enough people actually use star ratings for it to matter to keep the feature there.
Yeah, I would guess that you're right there. And let me put that a different way. The only people that care about star ratings are those of us who care about star ratings.
Sure.
And that is almost definitely a small subset of the iTunes, Apple Music user.
That's my guess. Yeah.
It's frustrating, though. And here, let me tell you why it's frustrating. It's frustrating because those of us who do care about it mm-hmm. have spent years building our star ratings and tweaking them. And some people, of course, are very obsessive about it. Extremely obsessive about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I do know people that have spent years working on their star ratings for their music library, and they have extensive music libraries. So I guess I should point out that even though I didn't realize the star ratings were gone, and to me it's not a big deal that they're gone, doesn't mean that I can't have sympathy for people that are really frustrated with this, because I totally get why it's a big deal for the people that use it. Yeah, so for people like you, Brian, this really sucks.
Yeah, it does. It does suck for me in that my like in particular, I want my 4 and 5 star rating song lists, my playlists. I do. I use those. Those were like the music I listen to when I'm writing is important. When I'm writing fiction.
Mm-hmm.
That music is important.
Okay, I have a question for you. And I don't have iTunes running right now because I'm recording. I want to make sure that our recording is good. Can you see the star rating column anymore in the list view for songs?
No, you cannot.
So now, the only way to see it now is to do a get info on an individual song, and that's it.
Correct. You can list your songs. So like, let me actually go to artists. So, right, I'm going to artists. Actually, I'm going to go to songs. So you can do, if you go to view and you get view options, show view options. Oops, wait a minute. I may have. Yeah, I know I'm totally wrong. Yeah, you can still see your star ratings. I don't know what I was doing. I was looking in the wrong place.
Oh, okay.
You can actually still show a column, but in song, but it's in the song view only. If you're looking at albums, oh, that's why. That's why. If you're in your album view, you don't. You can list by. You can sort by rating, but you can't see the rating.
That's okay, if that's you're just weird.
If you're in the artist view and you go to view options, and this is why I didn't see it before, is because I'm seldom in the song list view. I was usually in the artist view, and I didn't realize that, so you know, learn something new every day. Again, if you are in the album view or artist view, you can list by ratings, but you don't see them, which is again weird.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in the song view and you've got, you know, just that sort of old-fashioned list, you can in fact get the get a column dedicated to ratings where you can edit and view at the same time.
Oh, that was my next question. Can you edit in that column? So there are two ways on your Mac to edit the rating for a song. One is, do a get info on a specific track?
Yes.
Or two, go into song view as a list.
Yes.
And make sure that you have the ratings column showing.
Yeah, and to do that, it's you go to the view pull-down menu, and then you would view options. And the view options are specific to the view that you're looking at. So, for instance, if you're in song list, you actually have about 30 checkboxes that you can choose from. And in the other ones, you don't. Those are just not there.
Okay.
Speaking of which, I'm now using SongView from now on because, you know, there you have it.
But you still have access to none of this on iOS.
Yeah, you have access to none of it on iOS. You can do your smart playlist all you want, but you can't see this data, and it's super annoying. And I'm telling you, the number of songs that I like versus the number of songs that I love is different.
Sure.
Right? And a binary doesn't cut it for me. So here's the thing that we're really talking about. Why doesn't Apple make this an option? Is there an option in music for iOS 10 that says show star ratings?
I have a hypothesis on this, and it's that Apple doesn't like to complicate things, which is totally ironic to say because they've made some things so complicated. But I think Apple just isn't interested in letting us have that. But that said, man, can you imagine if all the things that Apple has taken away over the years, if they made options instead? Just how much we could do to really customize our experience with our iPhones, iPads, and Macs.
Well, yeah, and the thing that we were talking about when we were setting up for the pre-show is you said that there would basically be this massive amount of options that we, like, all the things that Apple has taken away, and where we said, you know, why don't they give that to us as an option? And you were saying that it basically would be this huge amount of things that we could choose from. And my just knee-jerk response is, wow, and, you know, we could use those things to customize our operating systems to be exactly what we want.
We could, but if we had options on that scale, that would be really complicated. And I think it would be really confusing for most people. I totally get why you would want that. And I would love to have a lot more control over the interface for my Mac and my iPhone and my iPad. But it's complicated enough right now, finding and using different settings. If we had all of those options available to us, I think it would just be a user interface disaster.
Yeah, and one of Apple's great strengths is God, do you remember when OS X first shipped, the original version of OS X?
Yeah.
Do you remember that we had the skin feature? I forget what it was called. It's been so long.
Aqua.
No. That was the skin that we got. But in beta, there was...
Oh, that's right.
I think they were called themes.
That's right. I forgot.
Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, I remember now.
And there, it shipped with three themes, but developers could make themes. And this was sort of like building on one of the third party features that was really popular with macOS, the original macOS. Mac, in this case, Mac OS 9, mm-hmm. Right? Not Mac OS Sierra. And what was that third party? There was a third party theme. Mac OS 9.
I don't.
Third party theme.
I don't remember, but.
Appearance manager. There was the appearance manager. No, but there was a third party one that had, and there were just like, you know, hundreds of themes that people had made.
Oh yeah. I remember I would swap out themes and
yeah,
and it was a lot of fun. And sometimes the themes were like really useful, and sometimes it was just like this crazy looking thing that I did just for fun.
Right. Right. And we were super excited. You and I didn't know each other at this point, but in general, the community was super excited about
independently super excited.
Yes. And the reason why we were super excited is because the third party skinners were cool and everything, but Apple was giving us these tools to control it from like at an operating system level. And the three themes that Apple shipped were all very cool. Mm-hmm. And then boom, the final version of OS X ships and it's just gone.
Yeah. Well, and that's very Steve Jobs.
Yeah, Steve didn't want there to be, like, he wanted everyone's experience to be the same, both from a support standpoint and from a user expectation standpoint. Yes. And we were cranky about it. And the reality is that we came to accept it.
Right. And
it just became a non-issue.
And our operating system experience was less complex for it.
And the more specifically, the experience of less geeky users was consistently the same. Because, you know, here's what would happen. We love these things, so we go and set up our father-in-law's computer. Mm-hmm. Right? And, you know,
yeah, Brian, you're gonna love this. This is one of the reasons why people think we're dating, because you just said our father-in-law's computer, and without even thinking, I came back with uh-huh.
The fanfic is so hot. So we go to set up our father-in-law's computer, and, you know, we're like, you know, we're typical geeks, and we're like, you know, you're gonna love this appearance manager is really cool. And then, you know, we set it and forget it, and then, you know, they don't know what, you know, the father-in-law didn't know what he was doing.
No, they were all confused. Do you remember how you could change the alert sound sets?
Yeah.
And I had this awesome Star Wars one that had all these R2-D2 sound effects.
You said that wrong. I had this awesome Star Wars set. That's how you're supposed to say it.
I know, but I can't do that as well as you. Therefore, I don't even try.
Anyway, you had this awesome Star Wars set.
Yeah, and so, you know, R2-D2 would do different types of beeps depending on what was happening on my computer. And I would never have considered putting that on my dad's Mac, because he would have been totally lost, no idea what was happening, why all these weird chirps and beeps are coming out of the computer.
And, sure.
Yeah. So the standardization of having a single interface and a single alert sound set totally makes sense from that perspective, because it's so much easier for people to understand what's going on if they know what to expect every time they sit down at a Mac. Still, I miss that R2-D2 sound set.
Yeah, I love R2-D2 sounds. I do, and Star Trek sounds too.
Do you remember ResEdit?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, man.
Down that path lies Nuke and Pave.
I know, but oh man, did I do some awesome stuff. Oh, okay, I totally have to nerd out on you for just a minute here.
Please do.
So the chooser was something I had to deal with all day, every day, because at that point I was still working in printing and publishing, and so I was switching between different printing output devices all day, every day. And the chooser was just... It was just not what I needed. It didn't work right. But if I went in with ResEdit, which I totally did, and I hacked away inside the chooser, I could change the interface to make it what I actually needed. And so I made a custom chooser with ResEdit, and distributed it throughout the print shop so that everyone could print more efficiently. Can you believe that?
Yes, I can believe it because you're kind of awesome.
It was awesome.
It's why I married you. good times. All right. What's our timestamp, brother?
We just hit 55 and a half minutes.
Oh, wow. Wow. That we didn't even get to the secret. Our third topic was supposed to be the secrets to life, the universe, and everything.
Well, now people have something to look forward to next week, don't they?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, next week, you know what? Next week we can talk about that Mac event.
Yeah,
because that's coming the next day.
Right. I was going to say because by that time we'll be right before it, so we'll be able unless to talk about what hasn't happened yet.
Right. Unless, of course, we waited and did this show after the Mac event.
You know,
let's figure that out next week.
Yeah, we'll figure that out next week. But in the meantime, how about if we just wrap up now and call it good?
I like it.
All right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that is all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. And if you don't pick up your laundry, I am out of here.
I really wish you'd send me flowers.